Welcome, everyone. Today, we're going to start with Moore's Law. As you can see from this graph right here, Welcome to Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, brought to you by eejournal.com. I'm Amelia Dalton, and no, we will not be starting from the primordial ooze of electronic design. But speaking of which, have you noticed that almost every other keynote out there starts with the same graph? I mean, is there a keynote PowerPoint depository out there somewhere? Anyway, this week we're talking about VPX, getting your box design onto a board, and the myriad of challenges and advantages of system-on-chip or system-on-module in your next embedded design. My guest is Ken Grob from Elma Electronics, and we're talking about all of this and more. Check it out. Hi, Ken. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Great. I'm really happy I could come onto your program. Appreciate it.
All right. First off, what is Elma Electronics all about?
Elma Electronics has traditionally been a packaging company. That's how we got started. We made electronic extrusions and subracks and backplanes for the computer industry. And this is originally around 19-inch rack mount components. And over the years, we've evolved into more of a packaging and systems company where we offer package systems. And this can be from a small box up to equipment rack level solutions, including computer hardware inside the system. Solution like Euro card boards, CPUs, Ethernet switches, I/O, etc.
So at Embedded Tech Trends this year, Elma presented a talk called Boxes Become Boards, Technology Transitions in VPX. So first off, tell my audience what you mean by box solutions and board solutions, and how exactly are we going to do that?
So we've been working with several customers where using trends in chip technology, they've been looking at their traditional solutions being packaged in boxes, be it, say, ATR boxes or ruggedized boxes. And these boxes might be computer systems or communication systems like radios or navigational systems, etc. And as time has gone on, what they've been looking to do is save space, size, weight, and power, reduce those implementations at the box level, and move them more to a converged architecture where the solution, instead of being at the box level, it becomes built at the board level. And where this can take place is using a standard like OpenVPX, where a 3U board now can hold enough electronics to implement an entire function. And this is where now the customer can look at taking, say, a half a dozen to a dozen box level solutions on a platform like a vehicle and reduce it into a chassis that holds boards that now on a board-to-board basis implement what was prior done on a box.
So let's talk more specifically about the system-on-chip to the system-on-module part of this story. Tell me more about the challenges and advantages here.
Well, as we go down the road, system-on-chip could be a couple of different things. One, it could be, say, an Intel processor that's got I/O incorporated on it, where Intel's making parts that just aren't CPUs anymore. They're complete systems-on-chips built around a processor. On the other side of that, you might see FPGAs now becoming systems-on-chip, where the FPGA logic includes a processor in it, like an ARM processor. Examples of that would be Xilinx UltraScale or Cyclone from Altera, and a new thing called Aria, which is a more complete or larger scale solution. So when you look at things like, let's say, the FPGA solutions, you have to put a few things around that still to implement the entire system. And the support logic that you put around that takes some time to design. There's timing considerations with it and things like that. So if you look for the next higher level solution, which would be a system on module, you'd have either the processor device, system on chip on a PCB that's a mezzanine or an FPGA that's a mezzanine. What this can do is, when if you design around that, you can get an off-the-shelf solution from several suppliers, but it can save you a lot of time in some of the time-critical design areas that are required to implement that. So basically, it gives you a little bit higher-level solution, but saves you time to market in using that approach. It's also modular, where if you weren't sure how big you wanted your FPGA to be, you might be able to use that approach to be able to adjust the part that you're putting on your card or your solution.
So I saw you guys recently joined the standardization group for embedded technologies. So why did you guys join this group, and how do you see standardization affecting the future of embedded technology as a whole?
So we've done well with various standards bodies over the years, which gives a sort of a set of rules for people to engage in developing technology. For instance, a couple of standard bodies that we belong to currently are PICMG and also the VITA standards group. And this has provided us with an interchange format where we can work to bring these standards to the market. And this gives a set of manufacturers an ecosystem to provide technology in, let's say, a productized fashion to the market. So we've done well with this. It allows interchange, it allows growth, it allows interoperability. And when we look at it from, say, a small form factor system, we see some work around small form factor solutions being developed in the standards bodies. It still has a ways to go, but it definitely makes it easier for the end user to adapt the technology and to have a set of rules, if you will, for implementing that technology around a particular product implementation.
All right, Ken, it's time for your off-the-cuff question. Now, I know you enjoy scuba diving, something I haven't yet challenged myself to do, but I'm definitely interested. Where's the coolest place in the whole world that you've gone scuba diving?
I think the coolest place that I've gone scuba diving is down in the Caribbean around the island of Tortola. I got to spend some time diving, and it's really nice there. The water's not real deep. It's about 75 foot deep, and it's on the warmer side, and you can see quite well, and there's a lot of interesting things to see in that area. So it's great. You don't have to really go super deep when you're diving. You can dive at 30 to 60 feet, and it's actually better because you see more color and more of the fish and so forth when you're diving at those depths. So that was a great time.
Excellent. That sounds super cool. Well, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me, Ken.
Thanks. It's been very nice to come on your show. Thank you very much.
And now it's time for a little news you may have missed. No, it's not actually an April Fool's joke edition. Well, yet. We've all heard the wives' tale that you'll find a prince if you kiss enough frogs. Well, folks, I can tell you, I've kissed plenty of frogs, and not one of them has... Anyway. But what about frog foam? I'm not sure if it has any princely qualities, but it was recently announced at the Microbiology Society's annual conference in Liverpool, England, that the foam produced by the Tongara frogs found in Trinidad, while mating no less, can be used as a new vehicle for antibiotic delivery. What? Well, yes. Okay, so these frogs, which are tiny, less than 5 centimeters long, release a kind of protein cocktail with their back legs, which they then beat into a foam. Well, it's in this foam that they lay their eggs. So, when the researchers at the University of Strathclyde studied this froggy foam, they found that it was not only capable of taking up and releasing pharmaceuticals, but it was also highly stable and long-lasting. In further studies, and even cooler still, they found that this froggy foam released the antibiotic vancomycin for 48 hours, and it prevented the growth of staph bacteria, which is some nasty stuff. This foam didn't affect the skin of the test patient even after 24 hours of exposure. All right, my fish-frying froggy fans, I can hear you loud and clear. That's all fine and good, Amelia, but how the heck are we gonna harvest this foam from these tiny Trinidad toads? Well, Yes, that's probably not going to happen. Geez, I can imagine just finding these little buggers is pretty difficult. Well, this team at University of Strathclyde is hard at work to create a synthetic version of the Tungara frog foam, which they see as a groundbreaking new approach to wound treatment. If you want to check out even more details of this research, I've included a link on this week's Fish Fryin' page from the Microbiology Society called Using Frog Foam to Release Antibiotics. Frogs don't do it so well, and frankly, neither do most of us engineers. What is it? Thermal management, that's what. You've heard about putting a frog in a pot and slowly heating it? Ah, okay, I'm getting off track. But at some point in our design lives, we will probably find ourselves needing to measure temperature and take some action in our designs. Like jumping out of boiling water already. Okay, no more frogs. But thermal management can be a complicated area, with a lot of options in terms of sensors and supporting circuitry. In a recent episode of Chalk Talk entitled Thermal Management, I sit down with John Austin of Microchip Technology and talk all about the numerous alternatives for thermal management solutions. If this sounds like a struggle you have or may have in the future, I would suggest that you click the link below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page on eejournal.com or head on over to YouTube, keyword EE Journal, or you can also navigate on over to the on-demand section of eejournal.com. Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And if Google Plus is your thing, you can also join our circle on Google Plus. And we have a YouTube channel, I mentioned it earlier, keyword EEJournal, chock full of all kinds of techie videos, our very own popular Chalk Talk webcast series, and our video series called On the Scene. And you can subscribe to that EEJournal YouTube channel as well. And by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page, you can also grab our Fish Fryin' RSS feed or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Fryin' page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or perhaps the best geeky hotspot in your city, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of April 1st, 2016, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.